Ireland's Classic Hits, something for the weekend. It's Trina Mari here, and on the line we have Emily Chrislip. Thank you, Emily, for coming on the show. How are you?
Good, I'm good, thank you.
Good. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're in your 20s and you're married.
Yeah, I'm 25.
See, that's so young to be married. In Ireland, we don't get married till we're in our 30s, but you're married and everything. And you have a little boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you decided to become a surrogate. So what was it that made you decide to do that?
You know, my husband and I had an easy time getting pregnant with our son. And we watched friends and family members struggle trying to do that. And so my pregnancy and my delivery was very easy. And my husband and I started looking into it. I actually had a coworker that was a surrogate, and that's how I learned about it initially. So we just decided to look into it, and it all happened so fast. And it just kind of one thing came after another, and we're like, yeah, let's do it.
It's such a major decision for a family to make, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And how quickly did it happen then, from you maybe bringing it up in conversation with your husband to actually finding the couple and deciding to go ahead?
So we started talking about it, and it probably took, you know, maybe a month for us to make a decision. And then we started applying to different surrogacy agencies in the United States. February was when we started applying. And then I ended up getting pregnant September of the same year. So it all happened really fast. We matched really fast with the family, and everything just kind of fell into place. And so, you know, within 8 months, I was pregnant with their baby.
Okay. So explain to me how exactly it works. Are you just carrying the baby, or how exactly does it work genetically?
Yeah. So there's a clinic that they go through that the agency uses, and that's in California. And the parents, it's his sperm and her egg, and they made an embryo. And the embryo was already 5 days in the process when they implanted it. So it's 100% the mom and the dad, and I just carried it for them.
Okay. You're the oven cooking the baby.
Basically, yes.
Okay. Now, tell me about the situation you're in now.
Yeah. So, you know, the baby was born in May of last year, and it was probably March, so about 2 months before the baby was due. And that's when coronavirus started hitting the United States. And it wasn't until a coworker of mine had said, you know, what's going to happen with the baby's parents because they live in China? And I never even thought about it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have no idea. So that's when I started talking to my husband and our agency, and, you know, those conversations started. Well, what if, you know, what happens if they can't come over here? And, you know, our president closed down the borders. And so that was kind of the determining factor. Like, yeah, they're probably not going to make it. So, you know, my husband and I discussed it. We're like, well, let's just wait and see, you know, what happens. And then the parents reached out and said, asked, you know, we know it's a big ask, but we'd like you guys to take care of the baby if you're willing, and think about it and let us know. And so my husband and I talked about it, and talked to family and friends, and we all kind of came to the same conclusion that the best thing to do would be to take care of this baby.
And how old is the baby now?
She's 10 months old.
Wow. So what normally happens then, if the travel, everything was fine and they were able to travel, do the parents normally come over for the birth of the baby and they take the baby straight away from you?
Yeah. So what would have happened is her parents would have been here 2 weeks before she was born, and then they would have been able to be in the delivery room when she was born. And then at the hospital, my husband and I would have had our own room while I recovered. And then the baby and her parents would have their own room also. And so they would get to take care of her, you know, right after she's born. And then they would have just been able to take her home back to China with them.
Oh my goodness. And is no travel at all permitted, even on compassionate grounds, in a situation like this, which is so unusual? You know, this is somebody's life.
Yeah. So initially, there was no travel being allowed. And so now the restrictions have lifted. There shouldn't be any problem for them to come over into the United States. Right now, as far as I'm aware, the hardest part will be getting back into Asia. They're having more strict guidelines. And since the baby is biologically theirs, the parents are on the birth certificate, they should have no problem getting into the country, but they're still going to have to quarantine And go through a long process before they can even get home. Mm-hmm. And since the baby was born in the United States, she's a United States citizen. And so there's a lot of legal things that we've had to go through in Idaho specifically. When a baby is born, since I birthed her, I automatically assume rights to the baby. And since I'm married to my husband, he gets rights for a father. So we had to go through court and give up our rights. And the parents ultimately legally had to adopt their own baby. And so there's just been a lot of legal things we've had to go through. She needs a passport. And so since the parents aren't here to do that, they have to sign, you know, notarized consent forms to allow me to do that. And there's just a lot of hoops we've had to try to jump through to get everything ready for her to go. And even right now, I don't have her passport yet. So she can't even go anywhere.
Say that to me again. Is it your name on her birth certificate as her mother and your husband as her father or the other couple?
Nope, it's her parents. And so I had a lawyer here helping me when the baby was born, and the lawyer facilitated the court. We had to do it through Zoom because there was no in-person sessions. So, you know, I just basically talked to my lawyer and a judge on my computer and gave up my rights so that her parents could be on her birth certificate.
You're very brave in this whole situation because, you know, I'm a mom myself. I've got a 3-year-old daughter, and the bond that you have when you're carrying a baby and going through labor and everything. I mean, it's called labor for a reason. It's not easy. Do you feel any bond there? Do you feel like you are her mother in any way?
I do feel a connection with her, but I've been very careful with allowing myself to deepen that connection, if that makes sense. So I care for her a lot. And if anything happened, you know, we would still continue to take care of her. But I know, you know, she's not my kid. She's, you know, she belongs with her parents. She has a whole family that is just waiting for her to be with them. So, you know, I have a bond with her, but it is different than the bond I have with my son. It does feel different. And I think a lot of that is just myself creating boundaries and trying to make sure I protect myself from getting in too deep. Mm.
You've done all the tough stages, the night feeding and, you know, the milestones the babies grow through, like the crawling and turning over and the tummy time. And does she say mama or dada, or has she said her first words?
Yes. So she's actually starting to say dada. She can say uh-oh. She's starting to make the noise of mom. So she's starting to say those things. And when we do our video chats with her parents, I really try to, at least, you know, emphasize and point and like, look, this is your dad, and have her say it. And right now, dada's the biggest word. And so she'll look at my husband and say it, and he'll be like, no, it's Brandon. So, you know, we're trying to keep that line there so that those boundaries don't get crossed.
But, you know, she's 10 months old. She thinks you're her mama and he's her dada. Mm-hmm. It's very tough, yep. Isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And the cool thing is when we do our video chats with her parents, she's starting to recognize them and, you know, their voices. She really loves her mom's voice, and she'll interact with them even through the video chat. And so that's really cool to see. It makes us feel a little bit better that, you know, she may have a better transition now that she's starting to recognize them and they're not going to be complete strangers to her.
The thing is with COVID and with all, as you mentioned there, all the paperwork and all the things that are involved, it's very hard to figure out what date this is going to happen. What date is she going to go to her parents? So, mm-hmm. I mean, could it be another year down the line, do you think, or how soon could it happen?
You know, I'm hoping once we get her passport, we'll be able to speed things up. I know that the parents already have their visas. And so once we get her passport, there shouldn't be anything left to wait for the baby. So they should be able to just book their flights, you know, come over to the United States. We're hoping that we'll be able to have a nice transition, get her acquainted with them. And then they should be able to just head back over. They'll have to quarantine unless those get lifted. But once we get her passport, there shouldn't be anything else that they need to do here in the United States. So I'm hoping by her first birthday, and then, you know, maybe this summer, if not by her first birthday, but, you know, we're definitely hopeful that it'll be sometime soon.
And Emily, when that time comes, though, how are you going to be able to hand her over? That is going to be a heartbreaking day. Even though you say you're trying your best not to have that bond with her, you're kind of holding back in a way. It's going to be inevitable that you're going to have a bond with a baby like that.
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be emotional. And, you know, I kind of play the scenario over and over and over in my head, all the different things. And we'll definitely miss her. And I think at first it'll be a little nice because we'll be able to get back to our family. And then, you know, I think it'll finally set in like, oh my gosh, she went home with her parents. And, but my husband and I want to have at least one more kid of our own. And so, you know, I think that will help us. But we'll definitely miss her. No, it'll be emotional, but you know, we know she belongs with her parents and it's going to be an exciting day when they get to actually meet their baby for the first time.
The fact that, you know, you've reared her up until this point, she thinks you're her mommy and your husband is her daddy. Do you think it's fair on her that she's going to go to somebody else that she doesn't know? I know you say she's seen them on video and all the, but it's very different to being in your arms. Will it be fair on her when she goes?
You know, I think she'll have a little bit of an adjustment. You know, we can see when she's around people that she hasn't met before, she's a little cautious. But she will have a little bit of an adjustment. But, you know, I think back to when I was a baby, I don't have memories until, you know, I was maybe 4 years old. So I know that's going to be helpful for her in the fact that, you know, once she gets older, she probably isn't going to remember her time here and will be a story to her. And so that helps that she is so young, because even though she'll have a little bit of an adjustment and a transition, ultimately, you know, she's only going to have memories of growing up with her parents in the long run.
They change so much as well in the first year and it happens quite rapidly. And I know my phone, oh my God, the amount of photographs and videos I have on my phone of my little girl is ridiculous. Have you been keeping a record of all that for her parents so that they don't miss out on any of those moments?
Yeah, so I actually started when I started keeping track even from when I was in California for the embryo transfer. I started creating a pregnancy journal. And I put, you know, I'd take a picture every week and, I made a book for her mom, you know, just things that happened in the pregnancy so that they could feel like they were a part of it. I got her newborn photos taken and then I made a book of that. I made a book of 6 month photos. And then, you know, if she's here for us when she's one, I'll get more photos done. And then, just any photos in between, I've just created little photo books for them. So they'll be able to have this, you know, storyline in these books of basically the embryo transfer all the way up until they are able to get her.
I read somewhere, and I don't know how accurate it is, so you might correct me if I'm wrong, but there was an article which said that the parents are concerned about travelling over because it will take so long and missing out on work. Is that the case at all?
Yeah, you know, we haven't had any discussions about it, but I know her dad travels for his job, and just my husband and I talking about it to each other. Typically, when there's no restrictions, no virus going on, the intended parent will be in the country for 2 to 3 months when the baby's born, just to get all the legal things, the passport, all that taken care of. And I know personally, I would not be able to be away from my job for 2 to 3 months. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we're trying to get everything taken care of here, as much as possible, so that they'll have a shorter amount of time that they'll have to be in the United States so that they can get back home, get back to their lives. 2 to 3 months is a long time to be away from a job.
It is, Emily, but they must have known that before they entered into a surrogacy in a different country. Yeah. They must have known that that was what was going to take. You can't then turn around and say, well, hang on a second, I'm busy with work. Like, their baby is with another couple.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it in the beginning with this virus is that you know, with all the quarantining that they would have had to do to get over here, it would have added so much more time to their trip, because they would have had to quarantine, depending on if they flew through another country or not, they would have had to quarantine when they got into the U.S. because you can't fly directly into Idaho. You have to fly into a major city and then get into Idaho. So like if they flew into California, they were going to have to quarantine for 14 days in California and then come to Idaho, quarantine for another 14 days. And then, you know, so So those 14 days add up each place that they go. And so that was a big concern also, just all that time quarantining. But now that, especially in the United States, quarantining isn't being pushed hardly at all anymore. And so the only time that they'd have to quarantine now, from what I understand, is when they go back into Asia, which significantly cuts down the time from before, where they'd have to quarantine in every place they went.
Yeah. Even with the quarantining, though, I mean, it's for the best reason ever they're going to collect their child.
Yeah.
How do they feel? I mean, are you in much communication with them, or how are they feeling about having missed out the first 10 months already and who knows how much longer?
Yeah. You know, they haven't expressed a lot of it to me. And I don't know them well enough to, you know, bring it up. And so obviously they're excited to see her when we do our video chats, but you know, I don't know necessarily how to bring that up to them, like, oh, how are you feeling about all this? You know, and to them it may seem like a dumb question, but we haven't necessarily had conversations about it, just because I don't know, you know, for me it would be a touchy subject personally. And so I'm not sure. Obviously I would imagine that they're, you know, sad, upset. They're missing out on all these milestones for their first baby that they've waited so long to have. But I try not to bring it up because I don't know how that would make them feel.
Is there any possibility that they could change their mind? And I'm sure you probably ask this when you go to an agency, when you first consider becoming a surrogate mum. You could go through a pregnancy and at the end, the couple decide, oh, actually, we don't want to take the baby. Does that ever happen?
You know, not that I know of. I haven't heard of that happening yet so far. And, you know, a lot of other surrogates in my agency, we're all part of a Facebook group, and some of their parents are from different countries and they haven't had a problem with coming over to get their baby. And I think that part of the problem is that this virus came from China and her parents live in China. And so that did not help in their favor at all. I mean, I guess ultimately they could end up changing their mind. It's a lot of money, but you know, I guess that could always be, when we do a contract, there's always somebody listed in case, you know, something were to happen to the parents. There's somebody that said they'd be willing to take the baby. And so I don't know. I don't know what would happen if they decided that.
Would you keep her?
Oh, I don't know. That would be a tough conversation. You know, my husband kind of jokes about it here and there, like, oh, well, if they, you know, don't want her, we'll keep her. But she has, you know, family. And I can't imagine that there wouldn't be somebody that wouldn't want her. But, you know, I'm not sure.
Do you ever worry, Emily, that your husband is developing this bond with her? You know, you have a little boy, but I think daddy's girls, there's definitely a different kind of a bond there. And I know you say she's not biologically yours, but you've reared her from newborn. Do you ever worry that he's kind of getting a little bit attached?
Yeah, and I think he'll have a little bit of a harder time than I will, just because part of that is I started developing boundaries way sooner than he did, because I had to actually carry her. And he didn't necessarily start creating boundaries until she was born. And so I kind of had a jump start on that compared to him. And he loves babies and loves kids. So I am a little worried, you know, he's going to have a harder time than I will. But, you know, it's something that he has to kind of figure out for himself and create his own boundaries as well. But I do think that he is a little more attached than I am.
You mentioned there just before about the contract and if the biological parent could actually pull out, but you said it would cost a lot of money. Is that they would have to pay you a lot of money, or what does that mean?
No, so they would be out a lot of money. I mean, they had to pay, you know, for all the embryo, like that process. And then, you know, there's surrogacy compensation. And so that, along with, you know, they're compensating and helping us take care of her. So, you know, they'd be out a lot of money. I don't know, you know, as far as that, if they signed another contract with the agency that has to do with, you know, if they changed their mind or, you know, I'm not sure how that stuff works. But, you know, I can imagine them hopefully not changing their mind.
Emily, I'm intrigued, and I hope you don't think I'm being too nosy by asking you this, but we don't have surrogacy in Ireland, so that's why I'm so interested.
Yeah.
For you as a surrogate mom, financially, do they pay for all your expenses along the way, and do you get a lump sum at the end, or what way does it work, and can you tell me how much?
So I know each agency does it differently. Ours, so there's specific things that they cover, like my medical insurance didn't cover any part of the surrogacy. So, you know, I had to get an additional plan that covered it. And so, you know, they take care of that. There is like a base rate, and then they pay it on a monthly basis, basically, is how it works throughout the pregnancy. And then there are little additions that are thrown on. But typically for a first-time surrogate in the United States, you're looking at anywhere between 25 to 35,000 as your base rate.
And you say first-time surrogate. Do people do it a lot?
Oh, yes. There's some girls through my agency that are on their third or fourth surrogacy baby.
And would you recommend it, or how do you feel about it having gone through it? Because you had your first baby yourself and now you've had a surrogate baby. Did it feel very different for both pregnancies, and would you consider doing it again?
It was different, just because I knew it wasn't my baby. So, you know, you just create a boundary with it, and it's kind of hard to explain. But it was different, being pregnant with somebody else's child. And then I don't know, I probably wouldn't do it again for another family. If the same couple ended up, you know, reaching out saying, hey, they still have two embryos left. And so if they said, hey, we want to, you know, have another child, would you consider carrying it? I would consider it for them. But I don't know if I would ever, you know, go through this process again with another family.
Have you, I don't know what kind of a person you are normally, but has this made you emotional? Or, I mean, how do you feel about the whole process now in hindsight? Would you have done it had you known what was going to happen?
You know, I probably would have. The whole point of me being a surrogate was to, you know, be able to help a couple have their own baby and be able to experience what it's like to have your own biological child. And, you know, there's a lot of people in the world who don't get to experience that. And it's an amazing feeling. And so the whole point of it was to be able to help somebody do that. So in hindsight, yes, I would do it again, even given the circumstances, because, you know, even though, you know, the whole point was to give the baby over to her parents when she was born, you know, we've gotten to help this couple continue on. And, you know, we have provided a loving home for this baby. And, you know, I wouldn't change anything about it. The circumstances definitely aren't what I anticipated, but I wouldn't change anything.
And what are your family plans now, Emily? Will there be more children on the cards for yourself?
Yes, we do want to have at least one more. My son is almost three. And so, you know, we're starting to talk about time frame and, you know, when we are thinking about having our next child. But obviously there's this obstacle that, you know, we have someone else's baby still. So we've got to consider that also.
Well, plenty of time. You're only 25, so still a lot of baby-making years left, so no problem.
Yes.
Well, listen, it's been lovely talking to you, Emily. Thanks so much for taking our call, and I'm going to follow the story with great interest and find out. Hopefully, she'll be with her parents fairly soon, and well done yourself as well for making a dream happen for people, because everyone assumes, don't they, they can just have a baby. You never think that you might not be able to, and it obviously happened for you very quickly, you know, with your first child as well. How do people you know react when you've said that, oh, this is actually a surrogate baby? Do they think it's your baby, or what was the reaction when they heard that you were going to become a surrogate? Did friends go, oh, I wouldn't be able to do that, I wouldn't be able to hand a baby over?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who have you know, said, I wouldn't be able to do what you're doing. Mine and my husband's family has been very supportive, and you know, a lot of our friends are supportive. And you know, one of my really good friends, she has struggled. She's finally, you know, halfway done with a pregnancy, but she struggled getting pregnant for the last 5 years. And so, you know, a lot of people that we know have gone through problems with trying to get pregnant. And so, you know, they understand the parents' struggle. And so they commend us for, you know, what we're doing. But there are a lot of people who are like, well, I could never do what you're doing. And, you know, that's just a lot. And it takes a lot mentally, but it's shown, you know, me and my husband how, you know, mentally and emotionally strong we are. And, you know, I do think that it's made us stronger as a family too. So it is a nice thing to, you know that we did something for somebody, and we, you know, we're still doing well as a family. So there's really no complaints from our end.
You're very strong, and you're very clear in the fact that you're saying, you know, she's not your biological child, she's somebody else's. Do you ever have moments, though, where you feel quite upset?
You know, there are times, especially when she hits certain milestones, that I just feel for her parents as a parent, just missing out on all of the first year milestones. And so, you know, there are times when that hits, and you don't ever get a break from kids. They're 24/7. And sometimes my husband and I take turns, because when it's your kid, it's a different feeling. Like, you know, if they're having a rough day and they're nonstop crying, you just put up with it. But when it's someone else's kid, it's tougher. Like, oh my gosh, this is a lot to deal with right now, especially when it's not your own kid. So having my husband be so supportive and taking this on with me has definitely been helpful.
And last question, what about your son? Will he be affected when she goes? Because I assume he thinks she's his sister.
So yeah, with him, you know, in the beginning, we didn't involve him at all. He really didn't even know I was pregnant. We didn't talk to him about it until we brought her home. And even then, you know, he had just turned 2 when we brought her home. So he didn't even really understand what was going on. Now he's almost 3, and he understands. He knows he's a part of the video calls when we call her parents. And he knows that we're not her mom and dad, that her mom and dad live in China. And you know, we have a little globe at our house. And so we show him, like, this is where we live and this is where her parents live. And so I think he understands the concept, but I do think that he will be sad when she leaves, just because now she's crawling around and she's fun. So they play together, but you know, he'll adjust, and I think he'll be okay. He's a pretty smart kid. So I'm not too worried about him, but we do try to, you know, create some boundaries for him also.
And Emily, we've called her throughout this interview. I assume you want to keep the baby's name anonymous. That's why we're doing that. Is that right?
Yeah. The parent just want to keep a low profile.
Sure. Did you name her, or did her parents name her?
Nope, her parents named her.
Okay, yeah. Listen, Emily, it's been great to chat to you. Thank you very much for giving us an insight into surrogacy, because we don't have it here in Ireland, but I do know a lot of couples travel abroad to avail of it. So very, very interesting. And let's hope this little baby girl gets home to China.
Yeah, hopefully soon.
Great. This is Something for the Weekend. It is Ireland's Classic Hits.